This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
You're now listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. Education is without a doubt big business. In the last 15 years, we've seen private schools and international schools open up shop across the country. But with the challenges posed by COVID-19, will this business continue to be as attractive? To get a perspective here, I'm speaking with Kasim Kasuri, CEO of Beacon House School System Group. Beacon House Group is considered to be the largest school system of its kind, operating schools in various parts of the world, including Malaysia, the UK, Pakistan, and the Philippines. Kasim, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So Kasim, I'm hoping that we can start with the impacts of the pandemic. How are you managing the disruption to your schools around the world?
Well, it varies from country to country, and it really depends on the impact and the trajectory of the pandemic in that particular country. So for example, in Malaysia, as you know, schools have started to reopen because Malaysia has managed the pandemic quite well. But in other countries like in the UK, in Pakistan, in the Philippines, our schools are still shut. But what we have done, I would like to believe quite successfully everywhere, is transitioned practically overnight to online learning. And I think that's been a successful experience, although I can't say that it's been perfect because there are issues. Some people have issues with internet connectivity, or if somebody has more than one child, which a lot of people do, then they need multiple devices. It's been a mixed experience, but I think that on the whole, it's worked out quite well, at least for schools in our network.
Now, with regards to managing the pandemic, financially, how strong are your buffers, especially if students start dropping out? Are there any concerns on that front?
Well, to be honest, yes, there are definitely concerns. And there are people in different countries who have this idea that perhaps they should drop out of school and then rejoin when schools open physically. And yes, for sure, it's going to have an impact on schools because contrary to, you know, what some people think, private schools are not exactly a gold mine. They have a very conservative economic model, and it is dependent completely on the continuity of fee payments. And in fact, in different countries, what we've seen so far, it has not happened with us, luckily, but we've seen a lot of smaller schools actually shut down because parents were not willing to pay fees. And this is something that we saw particularly in cases where schools were not able to provide learning online.
And we've been talking about taking learning online in response to the pandemic. In your view, how viable of an option is that, whether in Malaysia or even the rest of your markets?
The thing is that people have been talking about online learning for many, many years. There's been a lot of, you know, lip service to online and virtual classrooms and flipped classrooms and blended and hybrid models. But it's kind of ironic that it took this massive global pandemic to actually get everyone to transition to online learning. And because, you know, schools were reluctant to do it in the past, so it did require a lot of teacher training because teaching online is not the same as teaching in a classroom where all the children are sitting in front of you. It's a different kind of approach. It requires a different pedagogy, different ways of engaging students. You know, are kids going to keep their cameras on or off? You know, how do you make sure that unauthorized people don't enter the classroom, which is an issue we've seen with Zoom and all in the past. So, I mean, it's not without its challenges, but I feel that it's worked out for us actually quite well. I personally feel that it has to be a mixture of what we call synchronous and asynchronous. So synchronous would be real-time teaching in which the teacher and the child can see each other. You know, it's like live teaching. But then at the same time, there have to be projects and assignments and reading and, you know, other work which the student is doing on his or her own and then getting back to the teacher. Chat boxes, you know, other forms of communication. So I think that for online learning to work well, it has to be a combination of these two.
Right. So is synchronous education then the future for your schools?
Synchronous and asynchronous education, both would be the future for our schools, because it's basically the way forward. But what we are looking at now is more of a hybrid model, a blended model, so that even after children start attending school, there are certain components that they can do offline, they can do with their parents, especially with the younger children. And, you know, flipped classroom models where a lot of the actual reading and all is done at home, and then the classroom time is actually used for, you know, live discussion. So, yeah, I think we are looking at more hybrid models moving forward.
Now, Kasim, what about a online-only private education at a cheaper price point? Is that something that you are maybe toying with under your umbrella of brands?
We are looking at that, and a number of other school systems are looking at that. But it would have to be then designed in that particular way. What I'm trying to say is that with regular schools like the ones that we run, it's not possible to offer online at a lower cost, because the entire cost structure has already been set up, the faculty, the rentals, the utilities, all the other expenses and overheads. But yes, if we were to design a completely separate model, which were to be online only, then yes, I do believe that it would be possible to offer that at a lower fee. And that is something that we're looking at.
All right. Now, speaking of your current schools, your physical schools, there are plenty of private schools in Malaysia as is. What makes Beacon House different from the dozens of other private schools in the country?
Well, for starters, Beacon House has been in Malaysia now for 15 years, actually 16 years. We opened up our first location in Subang Jaya in 2004. So it's been quite a long journey. And when we entered the market, I think that our forte at that point, if I were to, you know, identify one thing, is teacher training and professional development. Beacon House has always laid tremendous emphasis on professional development of teachers, whether in Malaysia, Pakistan, the UK, or in other countries. So we have over, you know, since I would say the late 1980s, we've developed programs in collaboration with universities in Scotland and in England for training our teachers. In the beginning, we used to have trainers coming from the UK, and in more recent years, we've developed our own master trainers, and they deliver those programs to our own teachers. So I would say that's been a forte. Another significant benefit of a network like Beacon House, which operates globally, is that we're able to offer our students much more, you know, far more opportunities for collaboration and for interaction with each other. I'm sure you'll agree with me that in this day and age, education is not just about academic learning. It's about communication and teamwork and collaboration and learning about new cultures and, you know, people who are different from yourself. And this is an opportunity that Beacon House is able to provide. So we have a number of online projects in which our students in different locations, it could be kids in Malaysia, Thailand, Philippines, Pakistan, the UK, working together, you know, developing their, you know, learning collaboratively and getting to know each other in the process. We also organize international tournaments on an annual basis in which students from different countries get together and collaborate with each other and exchange ideas and learn about each other. So there's a lot more that we're able to offer simply because of our presence in so many different places.
Right. I'm glad you brought up your network of schools. What are the synergies that you're seeing from that? I mean, you've brought up the fact that your students can work together across the world online, but what are the other synergies you're seeing maybe on a business front?
I think that it makes us a little bit more resilient in terms of being able to sustain shocks like the ones that we've seen during the pandemic. I mentioned earlier that in a number of countries, a lot of smaller schools have started to shut down because they were simply not able to meet their overheads. So it does give us a little bit of advantage in that respect.
All right, Kasim, we're going into a few messages right now. When we come back, we'll take a look at the business side of things and your expansion plans going forward. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Kasim Kasuri, CEO of Beacon House School System Group, and we're taking a look at their schooling system, especially on the back of the pandemic. Now, Kasim, let's talk about the business side of things. In your group right now, what's your main revenue driver?
In terms of the actual, let's say, business model, it would, of course, be the schools. In terms of geographically, it would be some of our larger markets, which would be, let's say, the UAE, Pakistan, and Malaysia. I would say that these would be three of our larger markets globally.
You've got about 8 education brands under your umbrella. Which ones are the bigger revenue drivers?
So without doubt, it would be the flagship brand, which is Beacon House. But over the years, we have expanded into a number of other segments of the market, starting from very, very young children. So in 2 countries, Belgium and Pakistan, we operate a play and learn program in collaboration with a US organization called Gymboree. We also run a not-for-profit liberal arts university, which offers undergraduate and graduate degrees. And in the K-12 segment, we offer a couple of other brands. There's Beacon House Newlands, which operates in Malaysia, in Dubai, and in Pakistan. And then there is another flagship brand we have called TNS, which originally stood for the New School, but now it's just called TNS Beacon House, in which all learning is done through project-based. But some of the other brands are smaller. Our main brand is Beacon House. We also, in markets like Pakistan, which are emerging markets, we also offer lower tier brands. So we have a brand known as the Educators. And the Educators, interestingly, is actually bigger than Beacon House. So if Beacon House has 100,000 children globally, the Educators has 200,000. And the reason for that is sort of, you know, obvious. It's because it operates at a lower price point. But yeah, if you look at it globally, definitely Beacon House School System would be the flagship brand.
Right. And in terms of profitability, Kasim, which are the countries that are showing black in the books? I know you said Pakistan and Malaysia were 2 of your much bigger markets. Which are the profitable ones?
Well, fortunately, these are both profitable. I don't know if they're going to be very profitable this year, to be very honest with you. By this year, we look at it in terms of the financial year, yes? So the financial year which ended on 30th June and also the financial year of 30th June 2021, because a lot of the impact, you know, we spoke earlier about the possibility of reduced student numbers, a lot of that impact is going to be carried forward into the 2021 financial year. So, I mean, this would be my advice, frankly. Somebody else was asking me the other day in an interview that, you know, what would be your advice for somebody who wants to start a private school? So I said to them that, well, my advice to them would be that they should not think that they're going to make money overnight, because it doesn't happen that way. Beacon House has been around for 45 years, and most of it has been a positive journey. But yeah, there have been years in between in which things have not been that great.
So Kasim, let's take a look at it before the pandemic broke out. Which were your profitable markets?
Before the pandemic broke out, I would say that Thailand has been a profitable market. The Philippines has been okay, not that great. Malaysia has been a, you know, reasonably, I would say, profitable market. Pakistan is our main market. It's our home market in terms of numbers. The UAE is a very promising market. I would not yet call it a profitable market simply because it's new, because schools take a few years. You know, when a new school starts, you may have a capacity for 1,000 children, but it takes a few years before it builds to that level. So we have 3 schools in the UAE, which are all fairly large schools, each with a capacity of 1,000 plus. But because they started in 2016, 2017, and 2018, so they've yet to, you know, come into the black. But I think that will ultimately be a good market for us.
before the impacts of the pandemic. Overall, was the group profitable?
Yeah, I would say that overall the group was profitable. But, you know, it's very interesting because if you look at individual countries, let's say we look at Beacon House Malaysia, okay, we always have some schools in the network which are not profitable and other schools which are profitable. So on the whole, you would say that Beacon House Malaysia is profitable. And it's that profitability which is, which allows us to then sustain schools which are not profitable, where student numbers are low, or, you know, it could be a new school that we've started. And the same then applies at a macro level, because when you look at all the 8 countries in which we operate, some countries are not profitable and others are. But then that allows us to sustain countries which are not. So it's we've never yet in 45 years, and I can say that very truthfully, been in a situation where every single school in every location is profitable. I think that's just a pipe dream. I don't see that happening.
Kasim, you've got about 8 education brands, as I mentioned earlier. Are there any plans to consolidate them under one brand, like your Beacon House brand?
No, there is no such plan because the different brands cater to different markets. And not just in terms of people's ability to pay, but also in terms of the kind of learning that people are looking for. In some cases, it might be more traditional, didactic learning, which is more exam-oriented. In other cases, it may be more inquiry-based or project-based learning. It could be based on the International Baccalaureate. It could be Cambridge exams. It could be the Malaysian National exams. It could be the, you know, the Thai exam. So, you know, there are a number of different socioeconomic groups we cater to, different nationalities we cater to. So we find that it's useful to have different brands that cater to people with different needs and different aspirations.
Kasim, earlier we talked about how there are some private schools that are closing down. With that in mind, are you going to be looking for possible acquisition targets?
Well, not at the moment, because to be honest with you, at this moment, our own focus is on our own sustainability. So no, we're not looking at that right now. But yes, if things do improve after the pandemic, it is something that we'd be willing to consider.
All right, Kasim, let's talk about your international foray. Now, in 2004, Malaysia became the first overseas market for Beacon House. Why was Malaysia picked as so?
Well, we felt at the time that there was a major need in Malaysia for good quality international education. And I think it had a lot to do with some recent changes in Malaysia, in which schools had been kind of changing between English and Bahasa as the medium of instruction. And the general sense was that there was a need for a good English medium private school. And a lot of people, you know, said to us that, you know, the previous generation used to speak really good English. And now these days, you know, young people don't have the same kind of opportunity. So we decided that, yeah, why not explore the market? And we were also fortunate because we had an individual working with us in Pakistan who was originally from Malaysia. So we, in fact, she was a Malaysian married to a Pakistani. So we decided that, okay, why not send her back to Malaysia and start looking at the market? And so that's how we started. And we had a great response. And then, yeah, just continued to open more schools from then.
Now, in terms of on the regulatory front, was Malaysia particularly challenging, especially compared to your other international experiences?
It has been challenging, yes. But then different countries have their own regulatory frameworks. Malaysia is challenging in its own way because there are a number of different, you know, government departments that one has to deal with in order to open a school. In the beginning, there was also an issue in terms of ownership because foreigners, you know, were not, or foreign investors, foreign companies were not technically allowed to own 100% of any business over there. It had to be, you know, you had to have a Bhumiputra partner. So, you know, there were a lot of challenges. But yeah, as we kind of persevered, a lot of the regulatory frameworks in Malaysia also changed, because I think that the Malaysian government also realized at some point that they wanted to actually encourage foreign investment. So yeah, I think that things have improved.
And how does running the business in Pakistan differ from Malaysia? I mean, you alluded to a bit of the bureaucracy a bit earlier.
Well, if I'm honest with you, Pakistan is a bit of a nightmare these days. And operating in Malaysia is much nicer because the regulatory environment and the judicial environment in Pakistan is not very friendly. It has not been very friendly for the last 5 years. And that definitely makes it a challenge. There's almost an adversarial relationship between the private education sector and the government. And that's not really helping anyone.
So with that in mind, Kasim, are you looking more towards the foreign markets to grow your business? Is there, and if so, what are the new markets you're focusing on?
We are, so in Pakistan, our growth is organic. And yes, we are definitely, I think, more actively focused on growth in foreign markets. And the two markets which we are looking at most closely are Southeast Asia and the Middle East. But of course, this was all before the pandemic. I'm going to be very candid with you. Things have changed over the last few months. And now our focus is on stabilization. And once the organization and the market stabilizes, then I hope that we will be able to continue focusing on these two markets again.
Right. So is it safe to say that you're not planning on opening any schools in the next year or so?
I think we're probably not looking at opening any new schools in the next, in the foreseeable future, which could be 6 to 12 months, other than schools which were already in the pipeline. Because there are a couple of instances where schools were already, let's say, half constructed or ready to launch, in which case we may have more to lose by not launching those schools, if you know what I mean. But yeah, in terms of initiating new projects, no, we're not really looking at that. I would say for the next 6 to 12 months.
And Kasim, just before we get into the school of tomorrow, on a more philosophical level, some think that private schools are elitist and in fact create a bigger gap between the haves and the have-nots. To those who say that, how would you respond?
I would say that private schools operate at all segments of the market. And I think a lot of people who say that tend to be talking about the more expensive private schools. If I give you our own personal experience, at least in our home market, which is Pakistan, we have 200,000 children who are operating at a very reasonably priced school, which would be comparable to, you know, the fee charged by any low-cost private school. So I think that there are private schools at all segments of the market. So I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that sentiment.
All right. And Kasim, to wrap up this conversation with you, let's talk about the School of Tomorrow conference. I think this is happening over this weekend. Could you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, it's happening over this weekend. We are very excited about it. We have an amazing group of speakers at the School of Tomorrow conference, starting with the Director General of the World Health Organization. We also have the head of the OECD Directorate of Education and Skills. Basically, the School of Tomorrow conference looks at how education is changing. So we are all mindful of the fact that a lot of the jobs that exist today, I'm sure you've heard this before, will not exist in the future. And we are also mindful of the fact that a lot of the requirements of the future and the jobs that will be required in the future, you know, we don't even know about right now. For example, 10 years or 15 years ago, nobody had thought of, digital media specialists or social media influencers, or the fact that you and I would be doing a radio interview over Zoom, right? So we feel that as a school organization, it's our responsibility to understand what the future holds and how we can better prepare young people for the future.
All right, Kazan. On that note, I'd like to thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
I've been speaking to Kasim Kasuri, CEO of Beacon House School System Group, and this has been The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.